Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Freeing up capital to make investments may not be as hard as you think. For those of you who have Facebook accounts, send me a friend request over there on Facebook and LinkedIn to Tahaka Amana Elbay. That's T-A-R-H-A-K-A. Amana is A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and of course B-E-Y. And you'll be able to see the actual documents clearly showing you how I was able to cancel my mortgage and property taxes contracts, and that way I have freed up capital for investments. To get the apparatus to do this with, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. It's not as hard as you think. Send a friend request on Facebook, and I'll grant that request so you can actually see the documents for yourself. Peace.
Rock, 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 rock Welcome, Moore's and Moore's Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bate, and this evening we're dealing with mechanics of mortgage fraud and the solutions to the problem. Now, what we're going to deal with here this evening is we're going to find out exactly what happens, what do they do, step by step, how do they get us in this predicament in the first place. This is going to be one of the most important pieces of information that you can ever hear, because these people are going to lay this thing out for you so you will understand what happens during the mortgage situation and how they go about committing their fraud. Because if we know what's going on, then all we need is a plan to get out of it. And that's how we come along with the a package to show you how to get out the mortgage thing. I've already done that, been there, done that. But there's a lot of people who still have mortgages, and there are a lot of people who still are under the impression that the mortgage that they have is some kind of way illegal. No, it ain't, is it? Anyway, I ain't going to go all into that. But what we're going to deal with here this evening is we're going to deal with what is the mechanics of a mortgage fraud. How can you be foreclosed on? What happens to make it possible? What is the solution to the problem? Because we're going to deal with the solution. And keep in mind that after you deal with what we're going to deal with here this evening, then in my opinion, you ought to be ready to go to work. The only thing you need is the tools of production. That's the way I see it, because it's real, real simple. But to look at one man and see one man doing something and done something, that's a whole different ballgame. You've got to do it too. So we're trying to make it possible for you to do this. And it's just not the mortgage. It's other stuff too, but we're going to deal with that tonight. Okay?
Y'all during a natural disaster and economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay. For more details, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
All right. Now, the first thing I want to say to you is this. And I know you're tired of me saying the same thing to you over and over and over. But when you fully grasp it in your mind, then you are ready to move forward. First of all, ain't no money in America. We got debt notes. The United States is a corporation, okay? All right? Now, corporation can't have no citizens. Because if that was possible, then Walmart would have some. But when you have this firmly fixed in your mind with everybody you're dealing with, when it comes to the court, if you go to the court and they say, well, I'm fining you. Well, the first question you need to ask would, you fining me what? It is, well, we're fining you $500. You fining me, are you telling me that you want me to give you the property that belongs to the Federal Reserve, which doesn't belong to me, and which is debt? Are you asking me for debt? I need to know that for the record. Because that is what's happening. You know, the country filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy in 1933, collected all the real money, called for everybody to turn into gold, and then we got all these deficits all around the world. We owe China, I don't know how many trillions of dollars, we owe the country too, but then we sit here thinking, we got gold and four knocks. How you going? Hey, you have gold and four knots, and you're another joke of $3. Come on, man. Wake up. Anyway, We ain't going into all of that, but I just want you to understand that this is not a game. This is real. So we're going to look at the mechanics behind this thing. Keep in mind, if you have questions, now these plugs that I'm going to play are about 15 minutes apiece. Okay, they're 15 minutes apiece. We're going to play these things, and what I want you to do is I want you to pay close attention. If you got your pencil and paper, that's fine. But if you miss something, you can always go back to re-listen to this broadcast again. If you have a mortgage, just think for a minute. If you're paying $700, $800, $1,000, $1,500, I know a brother, he paying $5,000 a month for a mortgage, living a beautiful home. But I told him, I said, well, brother, would you like to have an extra $5,000 a month in your pocket? He said, well, who wouldn't? I said, well, why are you giving away a $5,000? I said, you giving it away? And so after I broke it down to him, and I showed him how it goes, showed him how I did it, and all that right there, he said, man, that looked good, and I believe you, but I'm scared. I said, okay, I can't deal with scared. Ain't nothing I can do with scared. You, not a thing can I do with scared. Okay? Y'all hold on. We'll be ready to go. Ready
to beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona in the middle of summer where it'll hit a good 100 and, well, it probably won't go past about 110 today because it's cloudy, but it'll break 120 this summer. We have a lot to go over. A lot. Okay? This is the first seminar done on this. This is all based on discoveries of mine, theories of mine, doctrine of mine. I've been doing this a long time. I've been screwing with lawyers and judges most of my life. Don't like them. So I have my own way of dealing with them. Got involved in the mortgage thing a while back. Found a lot of errors. We used to have kind of our own little real estate business, did a lot of mortgages, sold a lot of homes, turned a lot of people into investors, and then all of this happened. And so I kind of wanted to figure out a way to save all of our people. And we're pretty much there. There's a lot that you have to learn. The problem is, the reason why nobody's really learning much is because of all the lies out there. This show me the note thing really destroyed just about everybody. It created a lot of bad precedents, created a lot of useless arguments. There's fundamentally no basis in law in any state in this country to demand showing the note. Do y'all understand that? I'm going to tell you exactly why. And then after that, we'll really, I'll go through some introductions and stuff. But here's what you've got to put in your head. If you're going to learn this stuff, you're going to learn it correctly. A foreclosure is based on a power of sale clause in the deed of trust. It is not, I repeat, it is not the redemption of a promissory note. Do you understand that? The note has nothing to do with the foreclosure. It's got a lot to do with the crimes that they commit so that you can stop them from foreclosing, but the foreclosure itself has nothing to do with the note. It is not a redemption of the note. It is a enforcement of a power of sale clause in the deed of trust. Does everybody get that? Because if you don't get that, raise your hand right now, because you will not understand everything that we're going to go over today. The note has nothing to do with anything other than proving that the deed of trust is invalid and that they are committing crimes against you. Okay, deed of trust, mortgages, really the only, the only fundamental basic difference of a deed of trust and a mortgage is the abject title involved, and that's it. Yeah. Okay. So before we get started, I'd like to introduce some people. We've got Andy and Patrick in back, and they've donated their time and the equipment to make all of this happen. Got one of my favorite people in the world back there, Joan, who's filming us wearing the OHM button. She's done a lot of help. Scott, Laura, and Dave back there, making sure you guys can get what you need. Mike's primary function in life is to make sure I can go out dancing, get drunk, and get home without getting arrested. That is a full-time, very dangerous job. Oh, yes. I'm literally a dancing fool, and I have no issues with Jack Daniels. And then we have Cindy, does an awful lot of help for all of us. Monroe's been a great asset. And I got this covered. And Nancy is pretty new to all of this and has just been incredible. She's, when you see documents that have been described and cleaned up, Nancy's pretty much the one doing that. That's a lot of work, guys. She deserves a big round of applause, too. In the back, if you'd please stand, we have Bill McCaffrey. An utter genius in this banking stuff. When he talks, listen. You're going to learn stuff from this man you will not ever learn anywhere else. Pay attention. I suggest that you take everything that you think you know and set it aside. It's all wrong. I promise you that. What you think you know is wrong. None of what you've read on the internet, none of what you presume in law is correct. How many of you go and watch court cases? Okay. Very few of you. Doing this and not going a couple times every week and watching a court case would be like buying Bruce Lee's complete library, watching it, and going and pissing off Mike Tyson. You're going to get your butt kicked. You have to, guys. That court is not a fun place to be. And it can be very intimidating. I do very well in court because I have an undying hatred for these people. And I inform them of that. They don't appreciate it, and usually they get up and leave. And I'm okay with that. You, perhaps, if you don't have enough practice, won't be able to do that. I had federal case, what was it, July 2nd, and this judge has some real issues with the whole I hate the Constitution, I hate America thing. That's why she's a judge, because she hates the Constitution, hates America. So straightened her out on those aspects, and I don't think she appreciated it, so she left. I don't expect any of you to be able to do that. What I do expect you to do, if you want to win, is to practice. If you're not willing to go and watch court cases and get together with your friends and practice, guys, I wouldn't do this. Okay? Court is very intimidating. So we have the introduction. I've got kind of a little outline here. I am really not, this is the first time I've done this. So I've made up some things to help all of us kind of get through this. Now we can jump right into it, or would you, and we'll do this by a vote of hands, Would you like me to take about 15 minutes, explain who I am and how this all got started, or do you want me to just go into this? Okay, just go into it. Raise your hands. You want me to tell you who I am and all that other kind of... Okay, it looks like just go into it, won by a landslide, and believe me, I'm fine with that. Okay, you have in front of you a book, and it's got a little bit of an insert in there. The insert is just an explanation on kind of the process to get the complaint filed. There's some good information in there, process server stuff, some addresses. Cindy actually made that up. So when you go to file your complaint, excuse me, it's not like you just run down to court and file a document, okay? You got to file a civil cover sheet. You've got to pay some money. You've got to get people served. There's what's called service of process. That just goes into a quick explanation of that. So you might remind me right before break, we'll do the postcards. Okay, I'm going to thank you, Shannon. Oh, I've got to do this whole legal disclaimer thing. This is not legal advice, education, and entertainment, free speech, blah, blah, blah. Raise your hands if you agree this is not legal advice. Everybody raise your hands. Okay. It's all on videotape. There you go. Okay. So we're going to kind of get started on the doctrine of why this has the effect that it does. So I put a lot of space in there for you to make notes. Follow along in your book. Make your notes there. We did that book so that you'll have it and you can go back through this in your own words. Now, we're going to do a little demonstration here. You know what? I probably have enough room up here. Oh, by the way, you have a CD on your desk that's got a lot of stuff in it, an awful lot of stuff. The latest complaint, which we wanted to get down to 10 pages, we couldn't. The smallest we could get it is 30 pages because 20 pages of it is the crimes they committed. You know, we could make it shorter if they committed less crimes. And that's pretty much what we say to the judge. If you want this thing shorter, tell them to quit committing so many crimes. I think it says a new complaint. Where's Larry? Where is Larry from Oregon or Washington? Oh, you printed it out, right? Okay. So if you want to take a break and talk to Larry and take a look at the hard copy of it, those of you with laptops, you can load it up, and it's a very, very succinct document, especially if you look at the prefatory statement, which is right after the caption set. That should be all you need, really. That just lists, says, hey, you guys are lying, you're done. But the document shows you how to go through and fill in, you know, what bank did what, who committed what crime. That's real important in a legal situation or legal setting. Now, this is the whole hands-on sort of thing. The reason I did this is people have a hard time grasping the intellectual aspect of this. So we're going to do a little hands-on thing. Then do this at the beginning so you can get this in your head. If you don't understand what we do right now, you're never going to understand the rest of it. How many people have studied, like, all of these patriot myths? Let me give you a caveat here. I grew up in that world. I started on the Patriot side when I was 12 years old. I'm 48 now. I got 36 years in that whole Patriot thing. Between the Birchers and everybody else, I'm real familiar with the truth. So I just don't play the whole myth thing. How many of you are familiar with all these insane concepts like accept for value, secured party creditor, all this other bizarre stuff? I just want to get a feeling for the room. So please raise your hand. So most of you. Now, accepted for value can work if done properly. There's a handful of people that know how to do it. I know most of them. The secured party creditor won't have nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it. Take your chances on that one. But please, for now, set all of that stuff aside. That won't fly in court. It won't. I go to court a lot. I see people go to jail over it. I won't touch it. So, let's simplify what all of this is about. Everybody knows what a promissory note is, correct? Everybody thinks they know what a deed of trust is, correct? Okay. So, here's the house. Here's... A man's home is his castle. See, that's proof. That's how a presumption works in court. And, see, I make big money. I made my own big money. There it is. Okay. This is a note. And it used to be like that. Parchment, wrapped up, promissory note. Promissory notes go way back. It's, I owe you a promise to pay, whatever you want. We call it a promissory note. Now, there's a house. There's a bank with a boatload of money. So, you go to buy a house. And you say, here's my promissory note. You give them the promissory note. They give you the house. We are done. We are done. It's over with. There is nothing else. We are done. Now, that's all legal. You can check that out on June 11th, U.S. District Court of Connecticut. Judge Kravitz wrote a memorandum decision. You'll see that on your desk. Judge Kravitz does not know who I am and has not read my doctrine. Judge Kravitz said, after several pages of dispelling all of the Patriot myths, the vapor money, the Fed, everything, comes out in this one little short paragraph that says, basically, the plaintiff just exchanged the promissory note for the check and then exchanged the check for the house. That's perfectly legal. That's it. So June 11th, which is one day short of a month ago, a judge said, everything that I'm trying to teach here is 100% right and legal, and they have no more argument. Perfect timing on that decision. So, you went to a home builder, you did it through a broker, mortgage company, a bank, whatever, but you basically went to a home builder and you said, here's my promissory note, and they say, here's the house, we are done. That's it. Whole deal's done. Then, fraud starts up. And they start talking about a deed of trust. When they start talking about the deed of trust, they confuse you into believing these are one thing. They were never one thing. And if you know how to read legalese and you know the correct assumptions and presumptions, you know for a fact that these are two different issues. So you give the deed of trust. So they should go like this, but they don't. They go like this. Do you see the problem? How many people see the problem now? When you handed them the deed of we'll just go back to square one. When you handed them the note, they gave you the house. The one thing that nobody will discuss through all of this is what's called money transmitter law. When everybody remembers when those check cashing places started popping up, like you go down, you give them like a car title loan or a check, and they cash it and they hold it. That's all under money transmitter law, what we call currency exchange. A promissory note is currency. The house is currency. That's all you did was a currency exchange. So this deal's done. So when I give them the deed of trust, what by law must they do? They must do this. That's a lawful deal. That is not a lawful deal, and that's what they did, and you fell for it. We're done. That's it. Seminar's over with. You got it. I'll see you the hell later. Guys, that's it. That is 100% exactly what happened, and you fell for it. There is no other concept. The show me the note, this is gone. If I sell you my car, can I come out yelling at you that I want to see my car? You better not have painted it pink. You better not have risen it or lowered it or anything. Can I do that? Because I sold it to you. Did you sell them your promissory note for the house? It's not your concern. It's over with. They wanted us to start yelling and screaming, show me the note, because we'd lose. Because every law or every state has a law on the books that basically states that a foreclosure is reliant and intrinsic to the deed of power of sale clause in the deed of trust and has nothing to do with the note. It is not a redemption of the note. You sold the note for the house. That deal is done. Get over it. The problem is you gave them a deed of trust. You've been paying every month. What should they do? No, give you your loan. Give you your loan. You don't want your money back. You want your loan. You gave them a deed of trust. Do we see the problem here? They should have done this. That is it, guys. And because they haven't done that, and that's still there, is this valid? Deed of trust is not valid because it's reliant on both parties specifically performing, which is legalese for do what you're supposed to do in the contract. And speaking of that, Joan and Nancy back there have a disc you may be interested in. I think it's $10. Covers a lot of legal stuff in there that you can cut and paste in your motions. See Laura and Scott and Dave back there. I'd highly advise you get it. We don't have anything to do with that, but you may really want that. Just the ability to cut and paste right on the legal documents helps. So, has all kinds of clauses in it. Are any of them valid? There's nothing in this deed of trust that's valid until they consummate their side of the deal. They can't do anything with that deed of trust till they give you the loan. What's that? Nothing. That's in there. They can't do anything. Nothing means nothing. Everything means everything. The law is very clear on that. This is not enforceable until they give you your loan. So why is all of this happening to you? If you look in your revised statutes in your state and your rules of civil procedure, rules of court, somewhere you're going to discover a clause in there. And it's a really disgusting clause. Especially if you're in a non-judicial state. Judicial state's much easier. But in a non-judicial state, when they created this concept, the government was in on it. Don't ever misunderstand that. The government was in on it. They put in there that there is a presumption that the bank is telling the truth. And lawyers are honest, and politicians are ethical, and judges are intelligent. So, with that presumption in the law, if you don't disprove that presumption, then it stands. The law is very clear. You can look at it, USA v. Twill, Connolly versus General Accounting. Those of us that do legal pleadings use those stare decisis, those precedents quite often. Anything that's unrebutted stands as fact and law for the case. So because the presumption is there by law, if you don't rebut it, the court must operate like the bank has fulfilled all of its duties and is being honest. Do you realize what a problem that is? You better rebut it. You'll also find that in the UCC, does everybody know what the UCC is? Raise of hand. Better yet, if you don't know what the UCC is, raise your hand. I need to know that. Okay, you got a big problem. You got a real big problem that you need to correct. The UCC is the Uniform Commercial Code. There are well over 100 uniform codes in U.S. law. The UCC deals with commerce. Hence, the UCC, it means Uniform Commercial Code. All of this is based on what in law is called commerce, commercial activity, doing business, contracts, partnerships, everything is in commerce. And the UCC is what dictates how both parties will operate. Well, in the UCC, there's a section that discusses signatures. In any type of litigation, one of the first things that you must do is, if you don't do it in the very beginning, you forsake your right in ever doing it. One thing you must do is question the authenticity and validity of any and all signatures. Because once a court case starts, you can't go back and question it. Now, it's important that you question this stuff, because that's where you prove a lot of the crimes. So does everybody get this? By the way, did this stuff help? Okay. You're right. Yes. That's the point. They never gave you the money. You never got the loan. No, they... No, see? Okay, let me do this again. Pay very close attention, because if you don't get this, you will always be wrong. If you're going to do that, get married. But here we're going to learn to win. There is the house. I walk up to him and say, "Nice house. I got a promissory note. You want to trade?" And they say, "Yeah, hell yeah." We are done. We are done. Now, 3 seconds later or 15 years later, you say, "Hey, I've got a deed of trust. It might pertain to that house. It might pertain to a rose garden. I don't know, but I got a deed of trust. You want to exchange that lump of money, that big old stack of cash there, for my deed of trust?" And they say, "Yeah, hell yeah." And you give them the deed of trust, and then they go put it together, and they all leave. And you're standing there going, "No, no, no." See, you're not putting all the lies aside. See, if you don't put everything that you got in your head aside, you're not going to get this. And I'm telling you, it won't work. probably 99% of Americans believe that. How many people believe the deed of trust and the note are one document? Before you got here, honestly believed they were one document. You're screwed. That's it. Welcome to America. You cannot win. Now, how do you win? You get rid of the lie. See, the bank doesn't believe it's one document. They've never considered it one document. When you sign the note, it goes over here. When you sign the deed of trust, it goes over here. That's not one document. That's two separate documents. Where does the deed of trust go? It gets recorded. Where does the note go? A bunch of different banks. The names notwithstanding. Is that two different documents? That's it. That's prima facie evidence. And law of prima facie evidence is evidence that is proof itself. Can one document go two different places at the same time? Yes. The law actually states they can never be apart. It's two different things. They can never be apart. If they're apart, they're not one document. Deed of trust is a simple contract. That's all it is. Now, I can tell you, and nobody will do it, is go back and read Bloom on Contracts of, I think, 1892, which is a foundation of contract law in America, but you're not going to do it. I did it. I would suggest you do it, but you won't, so I'll abridge it. Deed of trust is a simple contract. There's a lot of crap in there. None of it means anything. It's all lies. But we do know, pursuant to Carpenter v. Longan, 1872, that a promissory note can survive without a deed of trust. A deed of trust cannot survive without the promissory note. When I'm teaching this on Sunday, I always say the deed of trust is the tail. The note is the dog. Cut the tail off the dog, tail's going to die, the dog will just be pissed off. So the note can survive without the deed of trust. The deed of trust doesn't have a note with it. It's no good. It's just a simple contract. Both parties better, specifically perform. So knowing that, here's the note. Can it survive all on its own? Okay, so you give the note to the house. Oh, I'm sorry, Monroe, let me get to that. The way we think it happens is this is one document. And we go, and we go over to a bank. And we go, hey, can we get some money, get this house? And the bank says, yeah. And the bank hands the money over to the builder, and the builder gives you over the house. That's what we think happens, right? Doesn't happen that way. Doesn't happen that way. Yes, it used to, and the earth used to spin in a 360-degree cycle instead of 365 days, and blah, blah, blah. And there's a whole lot of used tos. I used to be in great shape. I mean, doesn't really matter now. That looking at law in a way that it doesn't function is going to cause you to always lose. So you must look at it the way that it functions now. And here again, here's the way that it functions now. These are two separate documents. We know they're two separate documents. This one goes off to the county recorder. This one gets moved bank to bank to bank to bank. And I will explain why that is. So we give them the note. They give us the house. 3 seconds later or 15 years later, we give them a deed of trust. They don't give us the money. They put it over here. So now they've got the note. They've got the deed of trust. They've got the money. And they want the house. Oh. Okay. If you have a question, raise your hand, and I'm sorry, we had planned that out. So there's four aspects to a deal. My button just broke. Yeah, see, don't wear these things, man. These things just suck. Yeah, I'm sweating like a pig. Yeah, go ahead.
One of the basic premises that I think I've noticed people missing on this is how can I, the average person, put a signature on a piece of paper and have that be worth a house, or, and then the other document, have that be worth the amount of money that they presumably don't give us. It's a sense of how can I actually just put a name down and not actually have $100,000 for the house.
You don't.
But what is? But that, I think, is the premise that people don't get when you talk about your model there.
You're absolutely right, and I will explain that. It is not your signature. You get a lot of these Patriot myths, your signature's worth $300 million, and by, yeah. You've got to understand banking law. You've got to understand money transmitter law. You've got to understand the UCC. Law is law. Okay. And the law, since December 28th of 1913, for currency, money in the United States, is based on the Federal Reserve Charter, which is called fiat currency. That's what we call it now. That's not what they call it then. Does everybody, who does not, it's a hard question to ask because most of you think you know what the Federal Reserve, how many people think they know what the Federal Reserve is? How many people think the Federal Reserve has something to do with the government? Good. Okay, so none of you think that the Federal Reserve has anything, because it doesn't. It's a little company in San Juan, Puerto Rico. That's all it is. So, what's that? Let's not get into that. But let's talk about the law. Because the way you're going to win in court is understanding the law. So, we have a fiat currency system, monetary system in the United States. F-I-A-T, currency, fiat. Not like the car, although they did operate that way. In other words, there's no basis for the value of the money. That's why we have what's called inflation. I'll give you an example. In 1910, a $20 gold piece would buy you a suit, shoes, and a hat. Have you seen the price of gold lately? In 2010, 100 years later, a $20 gold piece will buy you a suit, tie, or suit, shoes, tie, and a hat. Okay, but in 1910, that was $20. In 2010, it's $1,500. That's inflation. Now, gold is still gold. Thank you. So, if you understand that concept of where inflation comes from and all of that, because there's nothing backing our money. No, there is no, there's not gold in Fort Knox, guys. There's not. Okay? It's, we just print money. You don't want to know why we print money, and I'm not going to go into it. You definitely don't want to know why we print money. But there's nothing truly backing our money. So then, how do we generate funds? Well, we've got the mic, so we don't want any cutting in. You can raise your hand so that you can get there. No, it's not on that. Take a look at one of these little things we call money in your pocket. You'll notice on there it says a Federal Reserve note. It says note. Note in law is evidence of a debt. So everything you think about money is backwards. Now, I'm not going to teach you that today, but a note is evidence of debt. So if you have a $20 bill in your pocket, you have evidence that you owe somebody $20. And I know that's real abstract, but that's the law. Don't try and understand it here. It takes a long time to get that. But that is a note. And what is this? This is a note. There's a promissory note. That's a Federal Reserve note. But they're both notes. It's the same exact law. Same exact definition. So when you get this promissory note, you decide whether or not to sign it. You sign it, and you give it over to the bank. Now, let's kind of go over some laws here concerning notes. That's all in the UCC. I put that in the book somewhere. Page what? Thank you. Okay. So if you look at the UCCs, let's go to page 11, Black's Law Dictionary. Altered, to make a change in, to modify, to vary in some degree. Well, then let's go back to page 10, look at 3-407, alteration. Means an unauthorized change in an instrument that purports to modify in any respect the obligation of a party. So, how could this piece of paper called a note be worth any money? Well, you have to understand what happens with the Federal Reserve. You take a note and you give it to the bank. The bank, because of the Federal Reserve Charter, whatever money they have in an account, they can now lend out 27 times that amount. Do you understand that? Do you understand if you give the bank $1 million promissory note, they take that $1 million promissory note and they sell it to another bank. That bank then gives them $1 million and the first bank puts it in a savings account, what's called a deposit account. Now they have $1 million in a promise or in a deposit account. Now they can lend out $27 million. If you could do that deal, would you do that deal? That's why it's worth something. Now, where's the problem lie in this for us? Because remember, you should not worry about how they conduct their business. You must be concerned how you conduct your business. So, since you gave them the promissory note for the house, you've got the house and they got the note, then can they somehow redeem that promissory note if you don't pay back that promissory note and get your house back? Yes or no? Absolutely. Absolutely they can. Now, this is a caveat to what we're talking about here, because the foreclosure is not a redemption of the promissory note. It could be, but it's not. So what happens to the note that makes it to where they can't redeem it? They alter it. They stamp it, pay to the order of, then some kind of blank endorsement or maybe a signed endorsement, without recourse. How many people in here know what without recourse means? Okay. Guys, listen to me on this. You've got to do this. All of this, a lot of what I teach is hands-on. If you don't live this, you won't understand it, and you won't win in court. Get your buddy to give you a check for $50. Go down to your bank, the same teller you've been flirting with for the last 10 years. Endorse the back of it like you're going to cash it. And underneath that, write the words without recourse. You just started a party because you're going to meet the bank president. You're going to meet the security guard. You may meet the cops. Two most powerful words in banking, without recourse. And you can listen to me and you'll laugh about it. Do it. It's a blast. If you're bored, it gives you energy. I've done it just because people don't believe it. But when you go and do it, the teller who doesn't know nothing about anything, she'll flip her lid. She'll flip her lid. They will cuss at you. People do that to me a lot anyways, but in that particular occasion, they get almost violent about it. Those two words scare the hell out of any banker, unless they're the ones writing it. Without recourse means that $50 check that your buddy gave you, if it bounces, the bank eats it. They can't go after you for it. The bank eats it. If they can't get it from your buddy, they eat it. They can never come after you for it. Without recourse on any on everything. How many of you have a driver's license? See, you're all wrong again. You got to stop this wrong thing. You don't have a driver's license. You carry a driver's license. You are a holder of a state-issued license. You cannot have a driver's license. It's not physically possible under the law. So, I, once again, bored, went down and got a new driver's license that I was going to hold for the state. And just to see how many people I could upset, I wrote without recourse under my signature on my driver's license. Remember that day? I had to call Cindy and have her call one of my attorneys because I just lit up the city of Scottsdale. I mean, they're a DMV. I had to go through three layers of management, and I didn't know they spoke like that in public. But the whole thing was packed, and they are using the F word, everything. That they don't even know my ancestors, and they were talking about them. They were not going to give me this license. Those two words are very important. I put them on everything. Without recourse. I sign my name, chances are, without recourse, going on something. You're not going to believe how powerful this is till you do it. So just get a check, go down, endorse the back, write without recourse on it. Drunk guy was right. So why is this so important? It's so important because the UCC. The UCC uses that. Yeah, Patrick's coming.
Okay. Going back on without recourse on a promissory note, I had the opportunity of working with a lawyer on that recourse, and I have asked my lender to show me my promissory note. And on February, they showed me a promissory note, which was endorsed right underneath my signature, pay to the order without recourse by Washington Mutual, signed by the vice president. So what does that mean?
Okay, I'm going into that. Where do you see the term pay to the order of? Check or money order? That's it. So when they stamp pay to the order of without recourse and endorse it, what did they just turn the promissory note into? What do you do with the check? Okay. So then did they sell your check? Your promissory note that they converted to a check, they sold it, correct? What can you sell that you don't own? Nothing if you're not the government. Nothing if you're not the government. So if they stamped it and then they sold it, what did they prima facie just prove? They bought it. They owned it because they bought it, and they bought it with the house. We're done. It's done. That's why the UCC says if you alter this promissory note, you cancel the, actually use the word discharge. Discharge is another legal term. You discharge the obligation of the obligor. Now, why did they do that? Because they wanted to sell it to their friend's bank, get that $1 million, put it in their account so they could lend out $27 million. Then what does their friend's bank do? They sell it to the other friend's bank so that they get the $1 million so they can put it in a deposit account, and they lend out $27 million. I've seen these things with 32 stamps on it. And I think it was like a $282,000 promissory note. Do the math. This piece of paper generated the bank hundreds of millions of dollars in loans backed by nothing. That's like giving an 18-year-old a credit card, guys. you're going to have an issue. And that's what we've done in this country, and that's what we're paying for now. So that's why. If you understand that, now does that make sense to everybody? Now you see why the scam works the way the scam works. I don't know what else you'd call it other than a scam, but it's a brilliant scam. It's worked very well. It's destroyed the middle class. It's destroyed the country. And it's made the politicians mega wealthy. Just ain't done much for us. That's the whole thing, guys. It really is. Yes, Patrick. Excuse me, Patrick. Patrick. Yeah, we've got a question, buddy. Thank you. The other one?
Okay, I brought all my papers with me from New York when I came here. I have a copy. They made the mistake of sending me a copy of this promissory note. I have 4 stamps on it, paid to the order without recourse. Now, you did mention earlier that the authenticity of the signatures, especially in terms of this without recourse, because I think that gets them off the hook. But
no, the authenticity of the signatures is about every aspect of the document. And will be. It's not just that. There's all kinds of false signatures.
Okay, because I got this little copy of it. I got 4 of them on here. So once I got this back, I only got it once. They didn't answer my all my inquiries, but somebody in the bank slipped. And they sent this to me. And I wondered about it. Without the recourse now, the people who currently trying to foreclose on my home now, their stamp's not on this because I don't know how old this thing is. It's not on file anywhere.
Okay. No. Right. Okay. Is the deed of trust on file somewhere?
Yes.
But the note's not on file?
No.
Are they the same document?
No.
Okay. Then we're done. No. I don't tell you record anything at any time. I'm spending so much of my time keeping people out of prison because they went down and recorded something.
All right. I think I understand why they don't record it, because they change the nature of it. So if they do.
There's no reason to record a promissory note.
Okay, so they did not record this now. But this pay to the order of without recourse by all of these people, I had no idea about any of these people.
Okay, stop. It's none of your business.
Okay.
It's none of your business. If I sell you my car and you go driving down the road, if you decide to paint it green, are you going to have a problem with me coming and bitching at you saying, I want to see my car, why the hell did you paint it green?
No.
Yes, you will.
Oh, wait,
you're
okay.
Not going to want it. Well, no, please, you've got to let me finish or you won't understand this. When you sold the bank your promissory note, you're done. You're done. If you sell somebody something, you forsake the rights to that object. You can't complain about it. You don't get to ask to see it. You're done. The caveat. It's very important you understand the caveat. Why do we, in the documents, in the cases that I deal with, why do we talk so much about the note? Because there's a caveat. If I sell you my car and you're driving down Scottsdale, a little too long at Handlebar J's, danced a little too much, and the jack was cold, and the women were hot, and you're in the lake, nobody finds the car. You may come back to me and say, hey, John, you know, I gave you the money for the car. You need to give me the car. I better be able to prove you left with my car, right? So I go, listen, I pull the tapes from the DMV to show that you were there and that you registered the car. I show that you bought insurance on it. I show that your picture and a red flex, red light camera where you got a ticket. I got to be able to prove you actually picked up that car. That's the only reason we discuss the note. Do you understand that? But other than that, if you bought my car, I can't tell you I want to see it. If that bank bought your note, you got no business telling them to show you the note. Do you understand that?
Okay. All right, so we have no interest in the note. We relinquish all our interest in the note, is what you're saying.
Right. And one of the things that I try and teach people, and it's a very hard concept to understand, is anything that they do can be in their favor or it can be against them. That's called the onus probandi. And if you want to win in court, you've got to be an expert at reversing the onus probandi. In other words, we had a case. Bill was actually the expert witness in the case. Did a great job, hammered the banks. Then the plaintiff went into court and blew the thing. At least that's what everybody else thought. Because she got on the stand, and the attorney said, did you get a loan? She said, yeah, they gave me the money, I got the loan, and blah, blah, blah. Well, by her admitting that she got the loan, you'd think the case was over with. But let's talk about reversing the onus probandi. It hit me a couple days later. It's like, wait a second. It doesn't matter what she thinks. She never got the loan. So by her believing she got a loan, didn't we just prove something? Didn't we just prove that the bank's fraud was effective? You see what I'm saying? Reverse the onus probandi on them. The note, nothing to do with what we're talking about. You've all been brainwashed to believe it does. All men like Bill that knows everything about banking or the other forensic examiners, these people can track down the notes, track down the deals. And that's very important because you got to prove certain aspects of the deal was consummated. You got to prove the fraud. But in essence, they bought your note. What did they use to buy your note? The house. So therefore, it's your house and it's their note. What if the bank says, hey, I want to come in and tell you what color to paint your living room? What are you going to tell them? Yeah, I know what I'd tell them. Don't talk that way. So the same thing, and that's how the banks look at it. We bought your note. They just don't want to say it because then it's over with for them. Let's see what time it is.
Okay, Moore, we're back. Before we go into the last part of this, we got somebody with a hand raised. I'm going to go ahead and open up the line. And keep in mind, if you got questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand, and I will open up the line and we can discuss this thing. I think by now, in my opinion, it ought to be crystal clear. Area code 412.
Hi, Brother Taharka. How are you?
Hello, Ms. Parker. What's going on?
I came in a little late. I didn't realize the show started at 7. I was in the house doing some things. What is that man's name that was talking? What's his name?
Wait a minute. I'm going to have to get that to you because I didn't have it written down.
That's fine. I'll get it another time. But he explains everything. It's very clear that it's fraud going on. I understand that. But he rambles, and he to me, instead of just answering a question clear cut, he's condescending because he knows and other people don't. And it kind of gets in the way. It's kind of getting in the way of his explanation. Like, he started to talk about the four aspects of the deal, and I'm waiting for him to get to that, and then he never got to that. But I understand that he's saying that the fraud is this. The house and the deed of trust, or the deed of trust is one thing, and the promissory note's another, so they can't come and get your house because it's illegal. Is that correct?
If you let them, they can if you let them.
Yes.
They will. What these people are doing, he gave you the solution to the whole thing in the beginning. You weren't in to catch that part, but he already told us there ain't no money. All is his own paper. The law is right there. The law don't show up. The same thing I've been saying all along. The law don't show up until you do. When you call these people on this thing and you call it right and present it right, they cannot come out of the bill. It's over. Once you sign, this is, as I said, this is a thousand pounds. Once you sign the note for the house, it's over.
That's why they call it the closing. They call it the closing, right? Because it's closing the deal. Right?
Yeah. But then what they do is they got all these papers. And see, this is where we get into the muckety muck. Because we are under the impression that all of this is a part of what we supposed to do. So we just sign it. They just steady the bank, steady push it, sign right here. We sign it, sign right here. We sign that. At the closing, when they sent to the table in the house, they're telling you sign here, sign here, sign here, sign here. But actually, the signing of the note, that's it. You, the house is paid for. Why? Why do you think the house is paid for?
I don't know.
Opinion.
Tell me. It's
because there ain't no money. If the United States have already filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy in 1933, called for all the real gold, he just told you in the beginning that the Federal Reserve, the little old local office over there in Puerto Rico somewhere, they printing fiat currency. They ain't got no gold behind it. Ain't no money. So the only thing, the issue of House Joint Resolution 192, your signature pays for everything. So when you put that signature on there, that pays for it point blank right there. Even if they access your birth bond, ain't no money.
Wow. That's so deep. It's so deep yet so simplistic. You know what I mean? Because I think, and this is just in my opinion, Taharka, I think that they have us operating out of fear. Fear of losing our homes, fear of losing a car, having a car repossessed, fear of the IRS, you know, coming to your job and putting you in handcuffs. I mean, just absolute fear, or even fear of not having insurance on your car and being stopped.
Exactly.
Fear.
The whole thing operates on fear. He said that.
Yeah. Wow. That's empowering. And once you know, there's nothing really they can do to you.
Well, once you know, then
and
you'll
do
be
it right.
Well, this is what happened to me.
Okay.
Once I find out. I find out, because I sniff out stuff early. I can smell BS a mile away. When I found out about some stuff on the driver's license thing, I went down there. They say, I gave them the paperwork. They say, you just supposed to pay this here and just, I said, no. I said, I want a court date on this because I need to get up in the house. And I gave them some documents, and they said, oh, my goodness, I never seen anything like this. Let me go get the supervisor. We went in the back, and a whole pile of them came out. There were people around there, and I said, hey. And they came back. They said, well, you don't need no court date. I said, I know, but I want one. I need to get in your house. He said, well, we can't let you in. Because if you get up in here, you're going to tell them everything. We're going to send you a letter back. So they send me a letter, and they say, well, you can't, we don't want you over here. Just go away. You owe us nothing. Just go away. So what we're trying to do here tonight is make sure you know what's going on. Because, see, this thing here is not, just with, because we got brothers and sisters who believe, they believe this, and they had this fear, just like you say, they believe that, well, I don't pay this right here, and they're going to do this right here. Pay what? With what? What are you doing? They send you, you owe us, really? Where you at? I'll be there in a minute.
Right, 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 right. Right. That's something else.
Who are you? I said, well, I'm just an average guy and stuff. Could you please look over this right here a minute? And they look over there and say, I need to go get the supervisor. I say, you go sure do. And you need to get the Pope, too, because you're going to need him. And then they went back in the back, and they come out. Well, sir, I looked at this, and I have to apologize. Something went wrong. Like we got the check with our department. I said, you need to check something. What are we firing? Because we were not counting on a woke-up brother to come up in here.
Yeah,
and call us on the fraud that we got. And, I mean, it's all the way across the board. All the way.
Right.
You can see it through the news. If you look at the news, you can, I smell it. The rumor is so strong. It's amazing. Let me open up this other line right here.
Okay.
832. Eric code 832.
Good morning, Brother Tahaka. This is your brother down in Texas, man. Let me ask you a question.
Hey, man. Come on.
Hey, listen. I'm here shortly. I'm about to purchase a house, even though I know I can't. You know, I ain't got no money. How do I sidestep that crap? What do I do? What are steps I take once I go into this process to shut it down after the promissory note? What do I do?
Well, then you talking about the wind changing directions? I'll put it to you this way. When lions go out to hunt, the prey, they hunt upwind. They don't hunt downwind. They hunt upwind. If they're coming down off a cliff, the wind got to be in their face as they're moving toward the prey. Once the wind changes directions before they get there, Frank can smell them coming. And he turn around and he'll look. He strike out running. So what you got to do is learn how to control the wind. If you want to get
I hear you. But, and I heard it clearly what you said, you know. But my thing is that are you suggesting that I just go ahead and go into it as normal? And then after you get in it, take care of it after that, talk to me. Because, you know, and be a little bit more straight in what you're saying.
Okay, well, you don't want the lions to smell you coming.
Okay, I got you. I see. But with the regularly scheduled program, and then once you're in there, that's when you shut it down.
Yeah, you change the wind direction.
Now, let me ask you this in regards to, because I'm understanding, you know, the promissory note, that part of it is that's just the way it go. And even the deed of trust, but even though the deed of trust is that fraudulent aspect of it, how do you avoid that? I'm trying to, you know, should I just go along with all of that and then afterwards shut it down, or you tell me? I'm unclear on that.
Yeah, you go ahead and do what you got to do, because see, if you trying to get something from these lions and they smell you, I mean the wind change direction, you gonna get it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's say you going on in and you go ahead and get it, then the wind is in your pocket. You can change direction on it, and then you can say, well, look, I need you to explain this right here and give me a proof of claim that you gave me full disclosure. You gave me an opportunity to let my attorney look over my documents, my personal attorneys and all this right here, and here's your documentation by law. Could you help me with that? They can't. But now, if you go at them and say, well, look, I know this right here part here, and I need to do this right here. Well, how they gonna sell you something when there ain't no money? They can't. You understand what I'm saying? If you took any part of this with the wind in the wrong direction and went in there to try to get something, they can't do nothing. They can't give you what you want because there ain't no money.
Mm-hmm.
All this is a game. Okay. You got to understand, all of this is a game in commerce. This is a commerce game.
Yeah, and I got you on that. And you know what, brother? I still need your help on that that other little thing I had going on, just this court situation, which is some stuff. But you know, you gave me some information in regards to, you know, like you got to trust, put all your stuff in the trust, this, that, and the third. And my thing is, quite honestly, I don't have a lot of assets.
Well, you don't have to have whatever you got. You can put it in there. I don't care if you got a pair of scissors and that's all you got. Do the documents and get your truck set. Get your wheel set. If you ain't got nothing but a pair of scissors and you gonna wheel these pair of scissors to your daughter, that's all you got. Do it up. Put it down there. And you in there?
Well, I got.
And it operates on a continuous series of contracts. Formulate your contracts, put them in place, and control the contracts. You get the knowledge and the power. You even get wind direction tonight. So you. You got another question?
No, not for now. Go ahead. I'm sure some other callers that might want to talk.
All right, brother. Appreciate you calling in. Lisa, you got another question?
I forgot it. I'll listen some more. And oh, I know what I wanted to ask you. Has it been your observation that when, like, for instance, with bankruptcy and folks filing for bankruptcy, Tarka, when black people get a wind of the game that they play, they change the game. When black people start benefiting from what games that are moving their pieces and doing as the white folks do, they change the game. Do you think that once, we start getting rid of these mortgages legally and getting rid of car notes and all this stuff, They'll change the way the game is set up?
Well, I already told you the answer to that when I was talking to the other brother. I used the illustration of the lion.
The wind. Yeah, the wind. Okay, I got you. You're right. Yeah, because when you said that, I thought about that. Okay. You're right about that. Mm-hmm.
Let me do one of my most famous quotes. You paying attention?
I'm listening.
Are you listening? We dealing with criminals. See, if too many people start waking up, what do you think they're going to do? So we gotta do it, work as fast as we can, do as much damage as we can, and then they're gonna try to change the direction of the wind. So we got to grab another piece of wind and come from another direction, because this is
okay.
A fight. They're trying to maintain control on a system that they instead of breathing like a balloon, they blowing. What they call the truth into a balloon is blowing up. But if the balloon gets too much air, it'll pop. And that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because we got a whole country operating on the fumes of BS. And but the problem is we got a lot of people who are what they call themselves law-abiding citizens. I just don't want no trouble. I don't want no look. You can't look a lion in the face and tell him you want no trouble. You can tell him all you want. But you don't want no trouble. You can offer him a salad. He don't want no salad. We got to realize what we dealing with. These people, first of all, they're not citizens. Ain't no government. Is their corporation. Each state is a separate country. They make up stuff as they go along. But the tool that you have at your disposal now is law. This is working. But after a while, what's going to happen is you got to. This is why I had the other package showing people how to prepare for survival. Because after a while, they're going to realize, wait a minute, man, we can't keep a lid on this BS no more. Ever since we came out with the Wizard of Oz and exposed it all, and a lot of them still woke about that because they already told you, here you go, follow the yellow brick road, go down to the wizard, and follow the yellow brick road. That's the gold seizure to the Emerald City. What color was it? It was green. When you got there, that's where all the money went. But you followed the goal. You followed the trail of the goal. You had the 10 man, the EIN number, the TIN number. You had the scarecrow, all capital letters. I'm an imitation of you. I'm the fictitious man. Then you had the cowardly lion. It was Congress when they pulled the crap. They were too scared to get up and do something about it. Everybody all went down to that. But then when they flooded the whole area with cocaine, the scarecrow running around, help, help somebody, help. the Tin Man, he done froze, Dawson done fell asleep. Oh, my God, Dawson, you can't go to sleep. You can't get Toto fell out. It was a big mess. But and then Kansas City is located strategically right straight dab in the middle of the United States. Look on the map. They done told you what they're doing. Ain't no money.
Right.
But we still keep talking about, I'm going to pay my bill. And I always pay my bill. Let me leave. Leave you alone. So you got to deal with this, though. It's a big mess going on up in here. He's bamboozling. Malcolm X say you've been shafted, you've been hoodwinked, you've been bamboozled. He got guards standing up in front of Fort Knox like he actually got some real gold up in there. Ain't no gold in there.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but the whole thing, all you got to do is pay attention. Take a dollar bill. You good Christian loving peoples. Take a dollar bill out your pocket. Look at the dollar bill. Look on the front of that $1 bill. It's a Federal Reserve note. Let's just do a breakdown on that. Just that. Let's look up the word note. Look up the Federal Reserve. Find out where it at. Where located, what it's doing. Okay, we look at that, and then when you look at the meaning of the note, it tells you it's a promise. Okay, if it's a promise between who? It's a promise between the Federal Reserve, which is a privately owned company, little old small place over there somewhere where you can't find it, outside the United States, because we don't want nobody walking down the street finding it. So we moved it off the land, and then the promise between them and the Secretary of the Treasury. Look at the signature on the front of it. Now, if we done had the gold seizure in 1933, we done took all the gold, and we issued nothing but fiat, debt notes. And for all us big shots walking around with the rolling the money, flogging on the women, trying to make them believe they got some. They ain't got nothing. The cotton in their pocket after they take the money out into the lint that's down in that little hole in the pocket, and you pull that out, the most valuable junk they pulling out trying to show you. Anyway, when you look at the signature, that's a promise between these two people, the Federal Reserve and the Secretary of Treasury. There is no money. Okay, so what's left? There's nothing left but real money. That's your human energy that you're spending doing work and hustling and bustling and going back and forth. Anything outside of that is babbage. So if we can get this one little thing, and we're going to give it, I'm going to do a, we're going back and do another breakdown on what we're dealing with tonight from a different angle. I'm going to run this last little piece on this guy here, and then I'm coming back. And this guy here, he is going to do a different breakdown. But for those of you who have a mortgage, think about it. If you give somebody $8,000, $7,000, $9,000, $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $5,000. Imagine, use your imagination of having that in your pocket. And then call me and invite me down to South Beach. We can go down and have us a good time. Anyway, let me go on to the last plug, sister. Hold your hat. All right, here we go, Mo.
So selling something is incumbent on ownership. Can they sell the note if they don't own it? How do they own it then? With what? So then can they sell it? Then why do they want to see your house? It's all fraud from there on out. Okay, we'll go ahead and let's take a – I know we just started a little while ago. Let's take a break, get everybody up walking around, because you got to let this sink in. Oh, okay, before we go on break, here's something very important. There's a few of us that work very hard on this. If you look at the Internet is big because the guy that invented it didn't patent it. I used to do patent law. I used to teach patent law. I've got a boatload of inventions, a lot of patents. I was one time a very famous inventor. The Internet, the guy that invented it, said, I'm going to do any of that because I want it to explode. I think it'll change the world. He was right. So there's a lot of us that are doing this. We're not, you know, we're not asking money for documents and blah, blah, blah. There was some money asked for this because this was not cheap to pull off and we need to get equipment. But there was one person that was very involved in this and some very bad things happened. So in your booklets, there is a postcard. I want to real quick, I'm going to give you an address. I would like for everybody to write down this address. His name is Shannon Connelly, C-O-N-N-E-L-Y. His prisoner number is P-674052. So you'll have his name and then that number. Next line. P-674052. Next line. T as in Tom. -34-B as in Bob. -12. Next line, Lower Buckeye Jail. Next line, 3250 West Lower Buckeye Road.
Okay, Morris.
So there's two, most people who graduated from my school understand there's two instruments of money. There is, when you form a corporation, you can either, as a corporation, owe money, debt, okay? And the other face of it is you don't owe money, you owe equity, is stock. You know, let's say you and I form a corporation, you know, we'll put in $100 each. It's not a lot of money, but you have 50% of the company, I have 50% of the company, and we're going to just put our effort into this company to grow the company. Well, that's equity. So you either have stock or you have debt. So actually, let's have a better situation. You and I have a 50-50 corporation, and then we have a third-party investor who puts up $1 million. Well, that third party owns stock in our company.
Right.
Okay. Do we have to pay that guy back? No. It's through a corporate resolution that we might issue profits from the corporation to pay back this shareholder, including ourselves.
Right.
Okay. So that's what stock is about. So it's different than debt because debt you have to pay back.
Right.
So the reason why I tell you that is because what happens is there's this act called Glass-Steagall Act in the 90s, which basically broke down the laws for separating commercial banking from Wall Street. And it basically broke it together, and it was in theory a good idea, but what it allows the bankers to do now is to take your debt and convert it into stock.
Right.
And the thing about that is once you convert a debt, which is has a security, i.e. the deed of trust, the mortgage, the thing that allows them to foreclose on you, the security part, when you convert a debt into a stock, you forever lose, you transform the nature of that instrument.
Right.
And once it's been transformed, it forever loses its security. It's gone. So these bankers would peddle mortgage-backed security safe to Wall Street, and these institutions, your retirement funds and the stuff, they bought into it. Hey, that's a great idea. It's mortgage-backed security. What they didn't disclose is upon conversion, that security has been lost.
Right.
And so when they find out, these investment houses found out that, no, all this mortgage-backed security is just a sham, they started suing all these banks. And that's what happened in 2009, that whole massive bailout, that whole blood on Wall Street. That's what it's about, is the investors suing the banks, saying, hey, you sold us a bunch of crap.
Right.
We can't secure anything. We want our money back. And that's what the bailout is for. And that's why, because we issued close to $1 trillion and gave this literally free money to the banks, why aren't loans being issued anymore? Isn't it supposed to free up the banking system and give us more money so we can actually buy houses and have credit and stuff like that? Why isn't that happening? It's not happening is because it protected the bank from these investors suing them. It basically paid off all that debt. All that money transferred over. So now, get this, I'm a banker. I just got paid by converting your mortgage into Wall Street. I got paid a lot of money. I got speculation growth too, because it's a stock, right? Stock speculates.
Right.
So it's a hot market. I get the appreciation from that as well. Hmm. And then the investors sued me. And so I got money from the government, free money that I can pay off. So I got I was paid off completely, right? When I'm securitized, and I got backed up by the government as well.
Right.
Not only that, it's not my money to begin with, right? Remember,
yeah.
You created the money.
Right.
It was your signature that created money through your birth certificate. So wait a minute, it's not my money to begin with, and once I securitize it, it's forever gone, and I got bailed out by Wall Street. It's a good day to be a banker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what my mission is, to educate people in this scam. So what I'm saying fundamentally is every single foreclosure that happens is happening unnecessarily.
Right.
Because we have lost the definition of who the lender is. There is no lender. The lender is gone. When you sign a deed of trust, you have this two instruments called the deed of trust and the promissory note, right? And it points to one party, the lender, right? Now, if this note, the deed of trust is pointing to the lender, and the promissory note got securitized and got messed around, moved around, blah, blah, blah. So in the deed of trust, it still points to the original lender, right?
Right.
Who is the lender now? We really don't know. And so the definition of lender is now vague, butcherized. And so the deed of trust gives the lender the right to foreclose, but right now we don't know who that lender is, because the bank that you went to close either sold your note to another bank who then securitizes it, or if you dealt with one of the bigger banks like Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Chase, they took the note and securitized themselves. And what they did in their great deception is they took the note as a originally they are the lender, right? But when they securitized, they no longer can be called a lender. They call themselves a servicer. You don't know. You're still making the same payments to the same guy, thinking he is the lender. In fact, he isn't a lender. He's just a servicer. And when he foreclosed, As a servicer, how can you foreclose if you're not the lender?
Right.
You can't. But they do it all the time.
Right.
How can they do this? Because of your ignorance. And that's what my mission is, to educate people, to show them that this fraud is happening. So, you know, the whole thing about robo-signers and the big fiasco that was, it goes much further just than robo-signers. It's about who the real party of interest is, and we don't know who the lender is. And this is a Supreme Court ruling called Carpenter versus Longin, which says that the deed of trust follows the note. Imagine, if you will, the dog and the tail. Whoever controls the dog controls the tail.
Right.
Whoever controls the tail don't control the dog.
Right.
In other words, the trust is the tail.
Right.
Most lenders are foreclosing on the tail.
Right.
The deed of trust.
Right.
But they don't control the dog. So if you don't control the dog, how can you foreclose?
Right.
And they do it all the time because they rely on your ignorance, they rely on the lawyer's ignorance, and they rely on the judge's ignorance, and rely on everybody's ignorance to pull this off.
Right.
And my mission is to educate people to expose this fraud.
Wow, that's incredible. That's a really cool explanation. So that's great, George. What have you been doing recently? I noticed you gave a seminar recently. There were some videos online. Where was that?
Yeah, I went to Seattle and I gave a seminar, and it was phenomenal. It was really we had a lot of people who, this is my second time, and we even had a lawyer in the room. He was there in the first seminar, and he came back to the second seminar, and it was great because having a lawyer in the room backing me up in everything I said was tremendously powerful and satisfying because, you know, frankly, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I just did a lot of research, and I'm sharing this idea with other people. And the fact that he can back me up 100%, everything I've said, I mean, he was right there next to me on the stage, and he says, you know, everything George says made sense.
Right.
The second time round, because the first time it's like, whoa, this is just really heavy stuff. He didn't quite get it. He went back on the second time, and it made sense to him, so it felt really good.
Right. Wow, cool. What's some of your sort of best moments in terms of your most memorable things that have happened with court or with results that you've got, or like what's some of the bits that you're most proud of or most memorable?
Well, I've never been to court. I've never had to go to court ever.
Right.
And for most, I would say 99% of everybody that you've ever spoken to, the whole idea of going to court is just, I'd rather pull teeth from my own mouth, you know? It's just, like, scary, right? Why would you even do that?
Right.
So let me tell you more about this story then.
Yeah.
I filed a civil action against my lenders in March, but I then amended and refiled in June. They didn't respond in 30 days, so I had a default. So I celebrated my default in July, and my sale was in August 20th or thereabouts. Well, on like the 12th of August, I was notified that all my defaults have been set aside because they reviewed the paperwork and it was not properly serviced.
Right.
And kudos to the judge. I mean, I really didn't know what the hell I was doing. So if it's not properly serviced, if I were to sue you, Ben, and I sent the notice to Africa,
yeah,
it's not fair. It's not in the name of justice.
Right.
Right? So I need to have, if I'm going to sue you, I need your signature. It's only fair to prove that you received the summons.
Right.
If you didn't, then, you know. So the judge set aside, my bad, it was improper, perfect. So then because they set aside and my sale was literally next week,
right,
in order for me to stop the sale, I had to file for bankruptcy to stop the sale.
Right.
I filed for a Chapter 13. And so that happened, that stopped the sale. So then they moved the action from state court into federal bankruptcy court. And then they tried to do a motion to dismiss my case, which basically says, look, we'd rather dismiss your motion than to actually go to court and battle out and actually show you any proof. You know, we don't want to prove anything. And so they wanted to dismiss the action. And I objected to the action. And so we had a hearing on, when is this, November the 17th? Yeah, just last week.
Right.
And we had a hearing. It was couple weeks ago anyway, with a hearing, and that was my first appearance ever in court.
Right.
And so we had that hearing, and it was interesting in that the judge was very fair, very honorable, and he actually wouldn't say take my side, but he called the opposing counsel straight. She spent 15 minutes talking about what constituted a qualified written request and what I did was not right and blah, blah, blah. And the judge says, wait a minute. Counsel, as I understand this, Mr. Tran here is trying to challenge who the lender is, who's the real party of interest. Are you the real party of interest? Do you have the notes? And the opposing counsel says, yes, we do. And I said, objection. What do you call it? Hearsay, because she doesn't know that for a fact. And so the judge says, she's the office of the court, and if she says something, I have to believe her, which is kind of new to me. But anyway, he kind of spent 5 minutes just lecturing me on an office of the court and that she can't lie and she blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they didn't want to fight it. And then she said, Your Honor, we actually have the note right here. Holy crap! Right. Because the rules of court is very specific. You cannot surprise people. Evidence cannot be surprised.
Right.
The days of Perry Mason and drama, it's all fabrication. You can't do that. You can't just say, hey, I got a picture of you at the bank with a gun. You can't. No, it has to be submitted before so that you can prepare for evidentiary hearing. But given the circumstance, that's exactly what I wanted anyway. And so the judge allowed it, and I didn't object. Why would I object? That's what I wanted to begin with. And so she presented the note to the judge. The judge inspected it and said, give it to Mr. Trent. And so here's the thing that was really peculiar. She said Mr. Trent exchanged the promissory note for funding for the house. She didn't say Mr. Trent had a loan. Mr. Trent exchanged the promissory note.
Yeah.
In other words, it was at real intrinsic value. The other thing that the judge said that was really interesting is, Mr. Trent, I hope you understand, these notes are actually worth value. If you damage or destroy these notes or do anything to this note in any way, I will have you arrested. Think about that.
Right.
Okay? This is real money.
Yeah.
Now, when counsel went home, she asked for an armed escort for my notes.
Right.
These are notes in default. They're worthless, right, Ben?
Right.
Apparently not.
Right, right.
She asked for an armed escort for the notes. Right. Can you imagine that?
So that note is currency, as good as cash.
It's currency, it's good. So the effect was not lost on me.
So that just goes to show that the idea of us signing a note or a promissory note is money. That just goes to show.
True. And the judge knew it. The judge knew it too.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, I looked at the note and the note was clean. The note was, I have what I call my magic pen. It's a pen I sign all contracts with. It was a specific ink. And so when they presented that note to me, it was in that ink. And my signature is rather unique. So it was really pointless. I could have said, hey, it could be a forgery because unless we actually get it verified and forensically audited. But from the evidence presented to me, I just felt that was like, it's a pretty strong case that it was my original note. It just looked really real. Okay. What was interesting is all notes, as far as I've ever seen, has on the back stamped pay to the order of. And what that means is if, Ben, I wrote you a check and then you want to sign it to your friend, you say pay to the order of, you're basically assigning the note to somebody else. Now, that means I owe you no money. I owe this guy money,
right.
Correct?
Right.
You've assigned the note across. Well, that's the back that has paid to the order of. When it's been sold, assigned, when it's been securitized, it's paid to the order of. The back is clean. There was nothing on the note. It was good as the original, only two holes punched on the top. There was nothing.
So it hadn't,
which was really amazing.
Right.
It has not been securitized.
Right.
So I lost my case, and I do not begrudge anybody because, hey, if they are the real party of interest, they didn't sell it. The fact that they created the money and I could go with that, it's a hard case to argue. The fact of the matter is, I can't, you know, they presented irrefutable evidence to my satisfaction and to the judge's satisfaction. So my case was dismissed. But I want to tell you from my experience, I actually have two experiences in court. From the experience in bankruptcy court, I had really good rapport with the judge. I even joked with the judge. I actually spoke like to him like a human being. So it's actually a very pleasant experience, if you can call it that.
Right.
It wasn't as frightening as, you know, you might think. So, but that's in federal bankruptcy court. I also had another experience in court as a witness in state court. And the situations were not so favorable. The judges were less kind. And words coming out of the judge's mouth is, you need to get a lawyer. You need to get representation. I strongly advise you. Require you to get a lawyer, but I strongly advise you to get a lawyer. I mean, the words were coming out of the judge's mouth for these type of languages. But for me, I guess this is the difference between federal court and state court, maybe.
Right.
But my friend also had a similar experience in federal court, not state court. He has a case where he's close with Stern's Lending, remember? Bank A. Bank of America is trying to foreclose. And so the judge literally got on and slapped the attorney silly because, hey, you know, your paperwork is not in order. Mr. Waters wanted to have a loan mod done. And so because of this, he wants a loan mod. I want you to give him a loan mod. How long is it going to take you? 8 months. That's ridiculous. But let me tell you this. If it's going to take 8 months, then Mr. Waters, you cannot foreclose on his house, and he does not pay a single red dime until the modification is negotiated.
Right.
So that's what the federal judge said to my friend Mike.
Right.
Whereas in state court, and I guess maybe it's a difference of tone between state court and federal court. But anyway, we've had good experiences in federal court, not so good experiences in state court. But as far as memorable, that was a very memorable experience and pleasant, really. It wasn't like scary.
Right.
And the same with Mike, you know, his experience in federal court was just pleasant. The judge didn't take sides, but he was very fair. He basically saw the argument and went with the The thing about being a pro se litigant is you, in the U.S. anyway, I'm pretty sure in the United Kingdom as well, is that the judge has to look at your pleading and get the essence of your pleading, not the form of your pleading.
Right.
If you did a mistake, everybody has to be afforded justice. Whether you're a pauper, whether you can't speak English, it doesn't matter. You have, you know, let's say it's some African guy who can't speak English, and some British guy came and punched him in the face and broke his arm. Does that mean that guy is not allowed justice just because he don't have money and couldn't speak English? He has all the rights. You know, you assaulted the guy, right? That's what justice and equity means, is that everybody has to be afforded justice, whether they can verbalize it or not, the essence. And so as a pro se litigant, you actually have that you don't have once you get a lawyer. So you have a lot of leeway, and you can call the judge on that.
Right, I see. So the judge has to sort of try and understand your intention. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So
your intention has to be honourable, obviously. Right.
I see.
So there's like a tactical advantage about being pro se and representing yourself as opposed to like handing over all your kind of rights over into the hands of a lawyer type of thing.
That's correct. Well, the thing about lawyers is that, number one, this whole argument is so foreign and exotic to them that most people don't see it, and they just discount it and poo-poo.
Right.
It's like, this stuff doesn't work. I don't want anything to do with it. Because they specialize in certain things. Excuse me. They specialize in bankruptcy law. They specialize in real estate law. They know this stuff. They specialize in ambulance chasing, right? They know this stuff. They don't want to research any. They know their argument. And this is exotic stuff. This is a new area of law that and they're arrogant. You know, you're a layman. What right do you have to educate a lawyer?
Yeah.
We've been to school, you know? Mm. So they don't want to listen, for one. And even if they listen, they will charge you $2,000 to $5,000 just to research your case without even doing anything for you, all right? So let's say you afford them. Let's say you have a $10,000 budget. Once you go into court with them, you forever lose your ability to say anything. You are re-presented. It's not you anymore. You're not represented. You are re-presented. Because now the lawyer speaks on your behalf, and he can say anything the hell he wants. Right. You have nothing.
Right. So it's no good for people like us, is it? Because we need...
Well, if you find a good lawyer, and there are good lawyers out there that actually know and believe this stuff, I think it's worthwhile. Right. But finding a good lawyer is a challenge, and finding a good lawyer that you can trust that will do the right thing by you is a challenge. And I mean, I'm not saying don't get a lawyer. No, definitely do get a lawyer if you can. But just be very cautious as interviewing and selecting the right lawyer who can actually properly represent you. It's hard enough fighting opposing counsel. Imagine fighting your lawyer as well.
Yeah, right, right. I see.
Well, you don't want to have an uphill battle both ways.
So, if some of the people, I just want to advertise your website. So it's freeandclearin90days.com, is that right?
That's correct. Free and clear in 90.
And you've got like a free ebook, a PDF that people can download in order to get an introductory type of explanation to all this.
That's correct.
And so,
yeah. So I wrote a free ebook documenting my initial process. I have not updated my ebook since. Like I said, it's just only been a couple of weeks ago. I came back from Seattle, and just a lot of things have happened since. Right. But I'm going to be releasing another book, basically going into more detail as to what I've discovered in the judicial process as opposed to the administrative process, because I think that is ultimately where we can play.
Right.
And there are a lot of people that say you can get justice through the private administrative process and whatnot. I've just not had a lot of faith in that. You know, it's just I've not seen many successes. I mean, there are successes, you'd hear them, you know, we're a very connected community. We'll hear these successes left and right, but you know, there are few and far in between. I've not really heard enough successes to say, yeah, that definitely works. Yeah. The only thing the bankers listen to is a judge. That's the only thing they listen to. And so we have to go and play in that field, and you have to learn the rules of court. I mean, like anything, you can't just be an electrician. You need to get some initial training to know, you know, the red one and the black one, you know. What does that mean? What happens? You need basic education. That's what my coaching program does, is it shows you where to get the resources you need to be educated on the process. I'm not going to practice law, but I'll tell you where to go, how to hire a lawyer, what to say, you know, where to get the resources and sample forms and packages. Like, for example, I have what I use for request for admissions. A request for admission is a tool for discovery, which when you serve somebody, in other words, to say, hey, Ben, where were you on the night of the murder, blah, blah, blah. Were you, did you, basically, admission is, I accuse you that you were at the scene of the crime, you know the victim, and the victim owed you some money. I'm accusing you of these things, whether you admit or deny. Yeah. Right. So I include a whole bunch of requests for admissions that one could submit. Obviously, to, you know, you have to customize your own, but you can then submit with your summons to in your complaint.
So is that like is that like an offensive sort of attack? Is that like a counterattack?
It is, for most of us, we live in what's called a non-judicial state, right, which means that the bank don't have to prove anything. Now, those living in judicial states have different problems, but at the very least, the bank has to come up with proof. In a non-judicial state, they can foreclose on your house and just take your house, and they do that for every single day. The only way for people in non-judicial states to get any justice is to bring action, to sue the bank.
Right.
And so my paperwork, basically I have to give a bunch of templates of paperwork that I used that, you know, one can take, butcherize, modify, but at least you know the form,
yeah,
and customize it to your own arguments.
Right. Wow, sounds awesome, George. So, okay, so if people haven't already been to your website, they should go there and first read the e-book and then perhaps come, become a member of your coaching program or something. And also there's a couple of other things I wanted to ask. Are you okay, like, for 5-10 minutes? Is that all right?
Sure.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Moore, we're back. Now, here's a gentleman, another gentleman that has already seen this thing, and he knows how to deal with it. But all too often we have people who think that I'm going to have to go into court to do this. Okay, that's fine. But why don't you use the administrative process and exhaust the administrative process first? After you do that and you decide, because they're going to be in your position to go in there, because they're not going to call you on that unless they got a whole bunch of babbage and they're going to try you to the end. If you have already presented the mortgage company, which is going to automatically call the bank and present them with the same information that you're presenting them with, the only thing that they have left is when. They got to lead you to believe that you ain't got nothing. We going to court. Really? Really? Okay. Could you tell me what the court date going to be? And this game here is intricate, but if you understand the basics and the foundation of it and you stick to the basics of the foundation, there's no need to go to court. I ain't never went to court on nothing unless I wanted to go down there and they locked me out of there. Are you still with us?
I'm still here, Brother Dark. I'm still here. I have a question about once you clear your mortgage, once you discharge your mortgage, is part of the process for the land patent and the deed, will that be the process that removes you from paying taxes on the property anymore?
Well, the taxes on any property, first of all, that's a whole just imagine two offices side by side. One office to your right is the mortgage. The other office is the taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these offices are crooked. So you go in the mortgage office first. You deal with all the crookedness there.
Right.
And then you go next door and knock on their door. And they open you in, or let you in, and they got to lead you to believe that all this is legitimate, everybody's doing it, here goes all this paperwork we got on it. And so you just wait and just let them get through, and then you ask the real pertinent question. Show me the law. Is it lawful? Because I got a folder here in my hand with the law in it. So after all the smoke clear, when you walk up out of there, that's the end of that. Same thing with the mortgage thing if you do it right. But this is what you got to understand. There are documentation and there are things that you can use before ever going into court to neutralize these people. The only thing you're depending on after that is their own stupidity. That's all. They got to prove to you the legitimacy of what they have done. They have to prove to you how is it freaking possible, according to the law, for anybody to be paying taxes on property that the property and the structure on the property is not operating as a business. Show me the law. There's none.
Hmm.
show me how is it possible for me to owe you money about a mortgage when I've already given you my signature.
It wow.
doesn't exist. So, now, keep in mind, I've already told you about these lions. What these people mm-hmm. would do. If there's too much of this truth and fight and righteousness and actual fulfillment of this, they are willing to, first thing they're going to do is they're going to alter the game. That's
right.
Fine.
Exactly.
That's the first thing they're going to do. And they're going to re-alter the game. And then if we get 61% of America out of the game, it's time for Obama to come out and just change the whole game. You got to understand that America is, we really got some real money. Y'all people messing this up. The president, you see this is somebody right here? Because we lose thousands of dollars from our fiat. We just want to listen. You better be quiet about this. So this is a bottom line situation, and it's the most interesting thing, and the reason why it is so phenomenal is because you believe in your mind that is all mm-hmm. you got. I'm saying something. That's why I'm telling people to concentrate on getting your survival in order, because sooner or later, you know what with the fan. And you're going to go to the store, and the people in there, all the foreigners down in your neighborhood, oh, yeah, baby, the American dollar, boop, boop, mama, this is fake. You got to go. We don't want that money, and I'm not giving you no more water.
It's going to be a mess. Tark, it's like I liken this information to information about being enlightened. When, you know, you have someone that's been a Christian for 25 years, their grandma was one, their mama was one, and they've been in church, you know, Sunday through Thursday, and you show them information on the falseness of Christianity, the falseness of that religion, and the falseness of, you know, what we are as a people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they hear it and they believe it, but they have to digest it because it's so much to break that paradigm that they've been living for so long. And when I initially talked to you about this, and I said to you, well, how long did it take you? You said about 2 months. And I looked at the phone, I said, did he just say 2 months? And I said, wow, this is amazing. I mean, and every time I listen to your shows, it's hard for me to get to sleep at night because my mind is racing about this nonsense that they've taught us to believe in. And they have people living on the streets, and they're on the news talking about, I lost it all. I ain't had nothing. I don't have no house, no retirement, no anything, you know, and I got to work till I'm 80, and it's all false pretense.
It's because the people believe. See, one of the most phenomenal things in the world is everybody in this country wants to believe in America. They want to believe that this is us, and when we go to the Olympics, when they had the movie on about Rocky, everybody was on the American side, and the Russian was on the Russian side. And everybody wants to believe in America,
mm-hmm.
but you have to look reality in the face of reality and realize the bottom line is self-preservation, regardless what you believe in. We have never even scratched the surface of what happened in Vietnam. We have no idea. Baby, let me tell you something. The soldiers that landed in Vietnam, in the jungles of Vietnam, were faced with cobras, crates, snakes, spiders that ain't even been categorically monitored. The death tolls and the stuff that happened there ain't even been mentioned to us. America has fought desperately to control the minds of her people. She has to, in order to survive. This thing is about survival. But what I'm telling my people is, no matter what, self-preservation is the first law of nature. We can play the game as long as the game exists. We can go along with all kind of stuff. We can run down to the voting booth. We can vote. You can do anything you want to do. But never forget that self-preservation is the first law of nature. The United States operates on a continuous series of contracts called contract law. Master contract law. This is just one game that I'm presenting here this evening. You know, I'm not trying to destroy America, but my people come first, and everybody else on Earth comes second. Now, if there's anybody on the planet, I don't care if you came from Mars, come on down. If you came from Pluto, drive your spaceship, land it down there in the park or whatever you got to do, and get on off of there and prove to me, well, your people come first. Now we got to fight.
Right.
Now, I don't have no sonar or no phasers or no tech, no nothing. I got these two dudes. But if Margie want to get on off the ship and go on, we got to ride the rope. He might need to neutralize me or something. But I'm telling you, first, self-preservation comes first. My people come first, everybody else comes second. Now, what I'm depending on my people to do is to wake up.
Yeah.
I'm presenting this to you.
Yeah.
I don't care whoever else listens to it. I don't care if Caucasian people listen to this. I don't care if the Chinese or the Japanese listen. I don't care who listens. But understand one thing. You can jump out the bushes and I go, "We ain't my booty, we ain't, I don't care. Black brother." Now let's go.
Oh, my goodness.
Over here. So this is what I'm doing. Now, if anybody want to challenge that in America, come on out. Get the Pope, too. Bring him out. I don't care who he is. Get him out of here and tell me where I'm wrong. And look at myself and put my people first. Show me some documentation you got somewhere stuck under the archive down in the Vatican somewhere. Where I ain't supposed to be doing that. I got a lighter. I'm burning up. Anyway, that's how this will go. So this is what we're doing tonight. Now, the information that we're putting out here this evening is I'm trying to do from every conceivable angle to show you this ain't just me. See, I've been preaching this gospel for a long time, but I got these guys here, and I already told people a long time ago, all you can do is go back to my archives. I've been telling you forever. Ain't no money in America. So they ain't got nothing to do nothing. We got the Olympics game. We got the basketball game, we got the football game, soccer game, we got the golf game. See, this is what we have to understand. When a nation is think they free, then ain't nothing to do. So we have to have fun. Because if you don't have no laughter, you don't have no joy, you have no running, no playing, no fun, so the body just dies. So we got to keep these games going. You have to be lively. You have to, and see, one thing about people in America, and the rest of the world, I hope China listening, you got to understand, when we ain't got nothing to do, well, we argue and force a fight, we talk about slavery, the Ku Klux Klan, say, yo, shut up, I'm going to put on a sheet. And all kind of stuff. But you better not come in here from out of town, out of America, talking about doing nothing, because we will get you. All of it is, I thought you was mad with him. He had another thing coming. You in the wrong place. You know what? So, it's just like sisters and brothers. You fuss and fight, but you better not let nobody else mess with nobody.
Right.
And that's just the way we are. But in the meantime, we dissecting this particular game and we're dealing with it because I don't like the fact that you done fooled me on this one. So we're straightening this out tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Now tomorrow, we might have a fight with Russia. Well, we put the game down and we go get them. But in a minute, in the meantime, this is what we're dealing with right here tonight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what you think?
I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful, and I feel very fortunate to have crossed your path because not only you know your product, you help me through, you help the people through. You don't just say here, do this, here's the stuff you're on. You go and you walk me through it and help me with it, and it actually feels like a burden lifted off my shoulders, not to have to pay this mortgage anymore. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you something. Why do you think that I help people with what they're trying to do? Why do you think I do that?
I'm not sure. I think like you said, you're helping your own people be free. It's like freedom to keep them out of slavery, because we might not have chains on our throats and ankles and wrists anymore, but we're mentally in bondage. We're financially in bondage. And with your help, at least we can financially remove the bondage. We can live somewhat free. If we have our mental capacity, we can live free, period, financially and mentally. And it's no feeling in the world like it. It's like a euphoria. You do it legally, and you don't have to worry about nobody knocking on your door. You come home, and the door's boarded up, and the windows are boarded up, and your car's on the tow truck. You don't have to worry about all of that. There are so many people so stressed out about paying a mortgage. I know people that barely can buy themselves a pair of shoes and work every day. Every day.
Mm-hmm.
And she puts her needs on a list. I'm going to buy me some shoes. I'm going to paint my house. I'm going to go on a vacation. I did pay my mortgage. I did pay my car note. I did pay all these bills. But she's going to start living. That's backwards to me.
Well, let me tell you why. I not only have the packages for the people to be free, but why I assist them in making sure that the reason is this, and it's real, real simple. I love my people. Make no mistake about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I ain't about to let them get nothing from me and go out there and mess it up and say, the Hawker gave me that. That's why I'm I ain't going to give you a shit to do that. Let me open this on the line. Tell me who you are, where you come from.
Greetings, Brother Tahaka. This is Miera, New York Republic. Yeah. How are you tonight?
I'm fine, Sue. What's on your mind?
That's good. I came on to the show a little late, but I'm really enjoying the show tonight. And I agree with the sister that's talking about how our people are, you know, it's like a euphoria. I was telling someone about the mortgage package, mm-hmm. and the person told me that due to their knowledge of taxes and other stuff that they're going to pass, they'd rather keep paying their mortgage.
Wow.
Well,
wow.
You know, yeah, like people, I'm like, wow. You know, I told them about, you know, my success story. And they're like, they're just scared, you know, like, huh?
Uh-huh.
They don't believe that you could actually have it, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. discharged. Mm-hmm. So
well,
I just left it alone because, you know, I'm still in awe myself. Like the sister, like, you know, it's been about two or three
wow.
years for me now. And,
wow.
you know, like, I'm going down to the county clerk's office. I just went down there. I called you last week to check out some things and see what was on my record, you know, and there's nothing. But I just have to find out the right place to go to get that the lien release and, you know, do the other things. But, you know, to the sister and anyone else that might be listening, when I sent them all the paperwork and stuff and demanded a jury trial, you know, to produce the original documents, like, they just wrote me off. And I'm like, you know, still expecting to pay the mortgage and stuff. And they say, like, it's been charged.
Miera,
let
me ask you. Miera, let me ask you.
Yes.
Do you pay a mortgage?
No, I don't. Not for a couple of years, maybe 3 years now.
Wow. Nice.
Okay. And I hope I don't be prime, but when you were paying a mortgage, how much were you paying a month?
In the beginning, it was like about 500 and something a month, and then when I came out of work, it went down. It was reduced. I did a refi, I guess that's what they, a modification, I think that's what they called it, and that's what I was in the process of doing when I started the discharge process. You know, I was still paying it, but I started doing my paperwork and everything, and you know, they're waiting for me to send them documents and stuff for the modification. But in the meantime, I'm sending all these documents and stuff, you know, mm-hmm. getting recorded and sending it to the mortgage company and stuff like that. And so I called because the documents that they were requesting for the modification, again, that was when Obama came up with this homeowners thing and stuff like that. And they said that they didn't have any, you know, they was giving me the runaround. They said they didn't have any record. You know, they wasn't showing me owing anything. So they were sending me to this department, that department, you know. They sent me to another department, and they said, oh, it's closed. You know, they gave me the closed date and everything.
It's been closed.
And it's been 3 years, and I still can't believe it.
Yeah,
and I tell people about it, and it's like, but like the sister, that, you know, like, and what we have to do is show people, because when you mm-hmm. tell people, we have been so conditioned for so many years and stuff, you know, people are not going to believe it. It's like they're just stuck, you know, but then when they see things that happen with you, and they're like, wow, you know, I have family coming from Niagara Falls now, want to, you know, do some studying and, you know, come in on the conference calls and stuff. So I told them I can't be reminding y'all every week. You got to write it on the calendar or something,
right.
you know.
Yeah.
But they will start seeing things change. They will see a change in things and, you know. But I just wanted to add that, and I'm just very thankful for Tahaka and his time. And I'm like, well, what kind of spinach Tahaka eating? Because I need some of that energy. I mean, you know, because you're going like nonstop. I know you get your rest and everything in there, but
I said, you got to have some kind of super phenomenal vitamins or food in that Aquitaine, that garden down there. I have to come down there and get some of that vegetables in that garden.
We was at the garden the other day at deep fried fish. But now, what were you going to say, Lisa? You got a question for
her? I was going to say that, you know, like the sister was saying, you go to your people and you try to tell them, hey, this is real. I can do it. Look at this. And it doesn't register with them. Even you can have the paper in your hand. But if a white person stood in front of them and said that, oh, man, it's real. It's
okay.
Real.
Well, you're right.
It's unfortunate.
You're right. It's a phenomenon. And I run across it now, and my family members, because I got a brother, he got to be paying about $5,000 a month on a mortgage on a probably almost $300,000 beautiful home. I'll be out there next weekend, and his buddy came and told him. He said, "Bro." He said, "I've been to your brother's house." He said, "Man, do you know your brother done canceled a mortgage on his house, man? He showed me the document, man. Do you know he ain't got no mortgage? So here he come." And so I showed it to him and everything. I said, "Okay, brother, it's your move." I said, "I'm backing you up." And the bottom line of what he was telling me, like, "Hey, man, brother, I ain't never seen you lose a fight. I have never, ever since I was a child, ever seen a man beat you. Never. But this here, I'm scared." I said, "Look, I can't deal with scared, brother. I ain't never touched you scared. Where you get that from?"
So
now he waiting, and he waited until my mama, my sister, and said, "Well, we going to see how it come out." I said, "Well, how it come out? What you talking about? What do you mean how it come out?" "What? What are you talking about?" But anyway, you're going to people, the thing is, in my opinion, I think my people are filled with fear. We hear these wonderful stories about pioneers, and what pioneers do is they are the first one to go into the brush. And they establish the path for everybody else to come through. Now, if the path has been established, then ain't nothing left for you to be faced with is your own self. You either go through or you stand there with your fear and your hope, and you keep on suffering. I can lead a horse to water, but I can't make him drink. So
that's right.
That's what we keep on bringing it out, because it takes a lot of us a lot of time to make up our mind about something. We got to hear this. We got to see this. I got to think about it. I got to talk. Is there anybody else I could talk to? You? And that's amazing to me, for people to come. "Well, can you give me proof of somebody else that done already did it, as if that's going to do it for you?" And it doesn't do it, because you got people will come to you and say, "Hey, man, I did it. Here it go right here." "Okay, well, brother, I'm going to check it out." "Well, no. What you going to do? Check out, it's over. It's time to rock and roll. If you said that you need somebody else that done did it, and we give you the person that done did it, it's over for you. It's time to check out right now. It's time for you to rock and roll right now. Ain't no more checking out, nothing. It's over." Same thing happened when I told her, because I showed a brother. I sit down with this brother here. I had to sit there at least 40 minutes explaining to him, with my truck backed up in his face, point blank, where he's looking at my tag on my truck that I created on my computer.
He's looking at my ID that I created on my computer, and I'm telling him how I'm able to operate an automobile. I don't need a driver's license. I don't need a – you don't see no tag you looking at it. That ain't no insurance, no none of that. Brother, I see you, man. Man, they don't stop you? I said, no, they don't stop me. But guess what? After them 40 minutes was up, I left the brother. I went home, but and was there for a while, but I had to get back in the truck and go back in the same direction again. And the same brother was sitting right there when I pulled back. But this time when I pull out the popo, riding bumper to bumper, we going straight down there. When I passed the brother, I was blowing the horn. He started waving. And when he seen the popo on the bumper, he jumped up out the chair and stood up. And he was looking. Oh, my God. He didn't cut on the light. He ran out in the streets. I was looking at him. He was looking for the man to put on light. He was cut on light. So when I got through, I came back right out. I said, brother, what you think? He said, man. He said, man, golly. He said, man, golly, man. I was looking. I said, okay, what you gonna do? Man, I'm scared. I'm scared. I said, okay, I can't deal with scared. I'll see you later. I don't know what to do with scared. I'll see you later. I got my cook and went on. Every time I pass by, I blow at him and raise my hand and keep on going. And he looking, he raised his hand, and he think I'm the most wonderful man in the world. But I don't think his balls is the right size. But anyway,
yeah.
Susan, you got another question?
Well, I wanted to ask you about, you talk about your survival kit, right? And does your survival kit include information about, not driving with insurance or creating your own license plates and different things of that nature?
No, it doesn't entail that. What it does is it tells you how to survive in the event there is a natural disaster or a economic collapse.
Okay.
And it's based on people that have actually lived through these things, the professionals straight from the military complexes and stuff. And these are people who have actually been in it to tell you what to do about it. We got a whole lot of people that are spending thousands of dollars thinking that they are prepared, but the professionals are telling us they ain't prepared. We done been there, we done dealt with these people, they ain't ready. They done spent thousands and thousands of dollars trying to get ready, but they ain't ready. And what I hate to keep doing the same thing over and over, but I'm telling you, you got to get ready. The prophet Noble Drew Ali said, and he said this, that the day will come when $20 bills will roll down the street and no man will pick them up. Do you understand what that means?
Yeah. Money will have no value. And you won't be able to go and use it to buy groceries or anything else.
So what's left?
Grow your own vegetable. Have
survival.
A farm. Yeah.
Survival.
Basically, yeah.
You're going to have to know how to survive. Growing your own food is just part of it. You're going to have people, places, and things, and all this stuff, and all the information that you need to survive is there. We have already gotten ahead of this right here. This thing is real. We're just dealing with the mortgage part tonight, but the survival of my people is very important to me. You got to survive. You got to understand the first law of nature, self preservation. That's the first law of nature. I don't care what kind of legislation they put out. I don't care what they said on the 6 o'clock news. I don't care what the President of the United States come out and say to you. Self-preservation is the first law of nature. You're going to have to wrestle with this sooner or later. So what we have done is we have accumulated the best from the professional. So you can have this thing and you can get a head start. You can be prepared. You can have all the intricate ins and outs, nuts, bolts, wiggle pins, and a whole ball of wax, and you can be prepared. And you can survive. Now, they just had a thing which a sister came and told me about that occurred in, I think she said, Washington State, where a mudslide came down and wiped out an entire street. Everybody gone. They had this thing. It just came out of nowhere. And but knowing something is one thing. But having contact with your own self, your own culture, your own ancestors, your own spiritual self, they will guide you. They will warn you. They will let you know in advance. They will come in your dreams. They will come to you in signs and wonders and all kinds of stuff. But you got to be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that's all
you.
About.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I would agree with you. Well, I have to say, Tarka, I sent off my paperwork and I tracked the green card. They just received it today.
Okay.
They received it today, and I connected the tracking to my email. So when the card is on its way back, I will get an email alert letting me know that it's on its way back. But I did what you told me to do, and I found out who the president was of the company, and I sent it straight to him.
Okay, well, what they'll try to do is, once he get hit with it, he gonna run downstairs and try to get him to do something else with it, to get it off of him. But he can't because it's in his house. So, therefore, from there on out, you got a fish dangling on the line trying to get off of a massive hook you can't get off, and that's the end. It's just a matter of time and just exhausting the administrative process because we I don't deal with the going into court. I think if I ever go down there, I'll probably be such a celebrity to it probably have a band. They'll probably have a parade.
They're going to have a special sale for you, Tarka.
Yeah,
they're going to say, that's the one that causes all the problems.
Could you please turn the camera on? The lights ain't right. But the thing is, I don't care nothing about that. It ain't about that. It's about step one. Let me go over this one more time because I always go over this stuff. But step one, the first thing you have to do is a lot of us want to invest in businesses and stuff. But the first thing you got to do is, and then we burden with these businesses and then these are debt, and then we want to try to go and open up a business while we're burdening with debt. And then we go around and try to operate in the business, and next thing you know, we're failing. So why don't you eliminate the burden of the debt that you have first, free up capital, and the capital that you free up, then use that capital to invest. How about that? And then if you're doing that and you don't have the – because, see, the whole bottom line is freedom. You cannot enjoy anything if you're not free. God didn't make – America is one of the most beautiful places in the world. There is no doubt about it. Traveling across the land or looking at – what's available, looking at the mountains, you're up in the mountains, you're up going toward New York City, you're going down toward the the mid-Florida, you're going across the land to Texas, Arizona, California. Beautiful. Ain't no way in the world that God created this for us not to see. There ain't no way. That don't make no sense to me. But if you allow yourself to be burdened by debt, you can't go nowhere. I'm going to Atlanta, but I got to hurry up and do what I got to do, and so I can get back because I got to go back to work about Monday. Well, what about the Smoky Mountains? Did you see it? No, we ain't had time to go there. What about the beaches of California? I didn't see that. What about the zoos in Texas? There were zoos. What about the Everglades? What about the, you know, all of these things we cannot see because we do not have time because we are burdened with debt. So we eliminate the debt, then we can be free.
Right.
And
we
can invest and we can accumulate the money. Which ain't real money, but we can get some of this debt why it exists. But at the meantime, in the meantime, we can be protected by having the knowledge of survival.
Can I ask you this? Since the banks use our money to their advantage, do you suggest that we don't keep our money in the banks, or what's your suggestion for that?
Well, first of all, you ain't no money. Do you remember? All right, so that's their fiat. That's their thing. What's the most powerful system in the world? And who created it? We did, and the system is barter.
Okay.
All right, we that's something, money is something somebody else can, that's secondary.
Mm-hmm.
The most powerful thing that you have and the most valuable thing that you have is yourself and each other. That's life. Family comes first. Everything else comes second. Okay, after we get through with second, now we're ready to look at how we do it. You got bother, you got something that you consider valuable, that somebody else consider valuable, well, then it's change. The barter system is the most powerful system on earth. If I'm growing corn and you're growing field peas, well, I'll give you some corn and you give me some field peas. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got money. Well, we don't need you right now. Let me deal with my brother and my sister.
Hmm. Okay.
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 Now, if there's anybody else out there that got a question or comment, you can go ahead and raise your hand, and we open up the line up and so that you can get in. Okay, we got another one. 716.
Greetings, Haka. It's me again, Miera.
All right, Miera.
I just wanted to add on, since you brought up about the driver's license, I think the sister brought that up.
Okay.
And it's in your archives, too. You talk about that in the archives. But just to add on to that as a, you know, to just reiterate it, a person could Google constitutional driver's license. I discovered that. And it's
okay.
In that link, it tells you that the driver's license is something that the states came up with. You know, and it says it's unconstitutional to have a driver's license. And it gives you a form and everything. I didn't even click on the form because, you know, you have the information in the archives. But it's unconstitutional, and it is, you know, documented. You know, and it gives you the whole 411 about not having to have, not needing a driver's license.
Wow.
So if anyone wants to research further, that's another thing that you can do. Google constitutional driver's license, and there's several links and different stories and different things about it, and it tells you, you know, the whole nine yards about how the states came up with that for you to do that. It's explain how Taharka explains it too, you know, but I'm like, wow, you know, unbelievable, you know, and it's like so much, you know. It's very interesting, and I had been meaning to tell you, Tahaka, you know, so that you could, you know, give people that information, you know, too. But, you know, just so, you know, sometimes, you know, even with the stuff that you have and people see and read and study it and stuff like that, they, you know, it's still like a little, they might be unclear because it's something that we're not used to doing, you know. So when you get all this information and reading, but like some people, if they see it where it's coming from someone else, they could believe it. So if you need further clarification, there it is.
Okay.
Constitutional driver's license.
You're absolutely correct. I didn't know about that particular website. And as far as the archives are concerned, right now we are moving into switching from one hosting agent to another, and I'm having a terrible time with that. And but I have already sent the last documentation to them. I'm going to go back over it and resend it from a different angle to them so they'll know what I'm trying to get them to do. And but I'm having a hard time because we're talking about a massive library that belongs to my people. And I'm being as kind and as pleasant as I can. And I'm going to continue to do that. I've sent them the subdomain to be transferred over. And so far, I haven't gotten a response. So tomorrow I'm going to do that again because we got people locked out of this thing from one end of the earth to the. This is something that our ancestors gave me, and I gave it to my people, and they've helped so many people. So it would be wrong for the devil to take that away from me, and that would not be good. And so therefore, but anyway, I'm certainly appreciative of the sister bringing this information up. Miera, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here. I had my phone muted because my baby grandson is awake, so I had muted up. I'm here, though.
All right. How's poor Lizzie?
We ain't going to even go there.
All right.
Well, anyway, I didn't do it, though. I didn't do it.
You know you participated in it.
Yeah, I did a little bit. A little bit.
All right. Well, you got to be down here in Florida, and but we're going to be we'll be in Atlanta for the Moorish Summit 3, and we'll be back down here. But so make sure when you call me, if you're coming down here, come on down. And but just make sure that we're gonna be going over in August.
Okay, in August. Okay.
Then, because I got to go back down to the down deep Florida again, and I'm gonna have to go out in Texas too. So I'll keep you abreast of what's going on and where I'm traveling and stuff. So when you come down here, I will be here. And,
okay, I am planning to be down that way in April, so I'll keep you posted as to what date, and, you know, I got to bring some of those documents with me I was telling you about so that, you know, you can see. Okay?
All right.
So I have enjoyed the show, and I hope everyone that I have invited in, I don't know if they're on the call tonight, but whenever they do come on, they do let me know, and they enjoy the show very much. I'll let you know that. All right. You know, they're moving along, so maybe if they hear enough, they'll be convinced, you know. But, the phone is ringing. I can't catch my breath sometimes. So y'all better listen, Dr. Haga. Y'all better listen. Right. I say you have a library with a world of information. You don't have any excuse not to be able to do anything because he's got it right there.
Well, I found out that a lot of people would just rather for you to hear what they have to say
other than a solution. And when they're faced with a solution, they don't know what to do because they're too busy trying to get you to hear about the problem. But anyway, Susan, I'm getting ready to get off the air, and I certainly appreciate you calling. We'll see you in April.
Okay, peace. And sister, to you, good luck with everything. Peace and blessings to you in your endeavors and clearing your mortgage and getting all the other information with the driver's license and stuff. I'm excited about that. I got my applications, Tahaka, I'll let you know, for the passport, the citizenship passport, world passport, I'm trying to say.
Oh, the world passport.
And they sent me a bunch of information that you don't see on the website, the worldservice.org that you have in archives. I couldn't print the form out, so I called them, and they sent me some forms and a bunch of other information regarding the passport.
Nice.
So that was helpful.
All right.
So thank you.
Well,
again.
Thank you, Susan. I appreciate you being here. Okay, Lisa.
Yes, sir.
We're moving down to the last few minutes. You got something to say? 10 minutes closing.
I'm just thankful for you, Brother Tahaka. I really am. I don't, you know, I can't overemphasize that enough. It's just been a pleasure engaging with you and going through this process and talking to you on your phone, your private line, just getting the help that I need. And I'm just very thankful for you. I really appreciate it, you know, because it's going to literally change my life. And so I have nothing but good things to say, nothing but good things. And I enjoy your show. I tell my colleagues about it. They say they're going to listen, but like you said, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink it. And when I tell them, these are all black folks that I sit and talk to during the day. When I tell them I'm getting rid of my mortgage, really? Oh, that's nice.
Well, then, see, what's going to happen is when they actually see it, then what happens at that point, they are faced with a decision, and the decision is, what am I going to do about it? That's when the mess hit the fan, because you discover that, well, wait a minute. Okay. It's the most amazing thing that I ever seen in my life. I told my brother, I said, brother, you're looking at my tag. Yeah, I see it. I said, it's facing you, staring at you. Well, you know, brother, God, I said, oh, no, hold God. Just look right there. You're looking at dead eye. Hold, and move Jesus out of the way. You're looking at the real McCoy. Well, brother, I'm going to see how it's going to go with you. I said, it's been going this way for over 2 years. What's your excuse now?
Look,
I'm going to get back with you on this right here. I know you get it. You faced with the knockout punch. It's over. But anyway, sister, I'm going to go ahead and close this thing down.
Okay.
And I certainly appreciate you being in here. And we'll be coming back with some more. Exposure.
Okay.
We're trying to expose this thing.
Okay. All right. Thank you, and you're welcome. I appreciate you.
All right, sister. You have a good night.
Take care.
All right, Mo, we're back. We're coming to the close of this thing now, and I hope you got something out of this broadcast, and I'm hoping that you listen to this thing over and over and over again until you get it right. Now, I have selected a song that I think is appropriate for what we did. So pay close attention to this one so we can make sure that we clearly understand one more time.